The Right to Ricky Sanchez podcast is presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. Sign up for DraftKings Sportsbook by using promo code RTRS and brought to you by, oh, by the way, I just got to send a text message before we start telling people to go fuck themselves. Amos's manager, Perry, tell him to go fuck himself. All right. And brought to you by Adam Kasabi, the official realtor of the process. 302-864-8643, LL Pavorsky Jewelers, writes Ricky Sanchez. Listeners, go and get engaged. Big Barker Therapeutic Dog Beds. Get yours at bigbarker.com/Ricky and Kinetic Skateboarding. Get 9.1% off first order with promo code Dave Silver. On today's show, the Sixers beat the Heat in the play-in in just about the most painful game I have ever watched. But man, brother, I am so fucking psyched right now. If you're watching on YouTube, I'm so fucking psyched right now. If you're watching on YouTube, subscribe. We go live after every playoff game, and we're going to have a series here. Subscribe, hit subscribe, and turn on notifications right now. Without any further ado, here is Amos and the Chef. Welcome to the Rights Ricky Sanchez podcast. I'm Spike Eskin, along with a guy who knows a little something about Heat culture. That is Mike Levin.
And Daryl said that a team with Joel and seven Nick Batums wouldn't win.
Yeah, a team with Joel and seven Nick Batums would win by 35. What the fuck? What a game.
Awful game.
The best, though.
A horrendous game.
But the best.
Disgusting game.
But the best.
Look, let's start talking about Nick Batum, and then we can get to the zone. But like, just a ridiculous amount of shot making and playmaking and timely defense.
Bro, how about the dunk? How about the dunk that didn't even count?
The dunk that didn't even count was great. Unbelievable. That's on Bam. That was a poster on Bam after the whistle was blown. Look, the defense was unbelievable. You put him on Hero, who started to get hot in the fourth quarter. And he forces a backcourt just pressure-wise and then blocks the three to tie it because he's long and he gets his quick feet. Those quick Isaiah Pacheco feet. Lightest Isaiah Pacheco feet a Frenchman has ever had. And man, those threes were big. He started hitting it against the zone. That started to open things up. I thought he was pretty indecisive as a shooter in the first half. And then that was all gone in the second. He was six of ten from three.
He knew he was hot.
He knew he was hot. He was starting to attack off the dribble.
He was heat-checking.
20 points a career high, season high.
What the
Unbelievable.
Fuck?
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. The reverse putback off the maxi miss was huge. His timing on cuts and offensive rebounds has always been so good on this team. And in the game, the fact that it was this game when he had two really bad turnovers, one of which was on an inbounds pass, is just so many unlikely things. And this is what the playoffs are all about. Like, guys stepping up and having big moments. And fucking Nick Batum, who they acquired a couple games into the season, having this moment to put them over the top. Ridiculous shot-making, necessary defense, two-way play, some offensive rebound tap-backs. I love him. I've loved him. What a validating thing this is. I'm so happy about Nick Batum, man. Fuck. He's got to stay here forever. Unbelievable.
CJ, play the music. Play the fucking French music. Play it. Play it. Louder.
not so much pump-up music.
Yeah. We knew you want to retire, but you must play at least one more year with Tyrese Maxey and Joel Embiid and win many playoff games.
I can't say it's not offensive. It's not my place to say it, but it is still better than I expect every time. Really? Better than I expect.
All right.
Massive, so, dude. Just massive. Massive.
I don't have anything else to say about Nick Batum other than it was indicative. It was so interesting, right? Because one thing that Daryl said last night when we talked to him, and something that I think we believed, was that we thought the Sixers would be a little bit better without Joel this year. You know, they weren't very good at all. And I think we believed in the players on the team, on the role players, but I did not have it in me to believe that Joel and Maxi could have the games that they had.
Both pretty bad games.
Just excruciating. I mean, Joel came up pretty big down the stretch, I thought, but overall, a terrible game. Maxi looked just terrified the entire time. I just didn't think any of these guys, aside from like a campaign scorcher or something where he hit seven threes, or same with Buddy Hield, had the ability to just lift them up. And Batum, along with Oubre, along with Paul Reed, along with Kyle Lowry, along with, look, Hield, it has clearly has the yips, but and smoked a fucking layup that I can't believe he smoked, but played hard and went after it like the rest of the team.
But Buddy Hield's dribble penetration, attacking closeouts, even when his shots doesn't go in, him taking those shots and then attacking those closeouts. He had 6 assists in this game. Buddy Hield. He threw a lob to B-ball Paul, which I was begging.
I was screaming.
The zone was pushing them so far up. You got to beat him backdoor or something. You got to beat him over the top. And Buddy being the one to do it, he's obviously not that fast, but just the leverage of his shot allowed him to attack the basket. He had a couple finishes. Obviously, he smoked that layup. That was so bad. But his dribble penetration in the third quarter really, really turned this game. And he did have he had some good defensive plays on ball. He's just like Tobias. He is a terrible off-ball defender. Atrocious. So bad. But on ball, he can hang in there sometimes. He had a great possession on Hero, and then that's the possession he smoked the layup. But everybody contributed. Everybody was both fully to blame in the first half.
Yeah.
And then also like fully contributed to this victory. All 9 guys that played.
Just grinded, dude. And can I say, like, just putting my cards out on the table.
Lay them out.
Over the last few years, I, on some level, have felt a little emotionally disconnected from the playoff games, just like with this sense of dread that was always going to happen. And I don't know what happened with this game, but I was standing, kicking stuff, screaming. You can hear my voice. My voice is shot. My dogs, the dog and the foster dog running upstairs. My wife asking me what the problem is, screaming, pumping my fist, like to see the other guys on the team grind away at this game. Now, look, it helps that Miami has such trouble scoring for sure, but for to see them grind away and get this win was so exciting to me.
Yeah.
I just like, especially with how bad the first half was. The Rights Ricky Sanchez podcast is brought to you by Adam Kasabi, the official realtor of The Process. If you want a bunch of money on this game and you want to buy a shore house in Delaware, you can't call anybody else but Adam Kasabi, the official realtor of The Process. You might ask me, how do you spell Kasabi? I'm going to answer you. K-S-E-B-E. K-S-E-B-E. He is the king of the Delaware beaches. Whether you want a home in Rehoboth or in Lewis or in Bethany or in, I always forget the one where the kids go to. What's the Delaware beach that the kids go to that they all party and stuff? Dewey Beach, wherever you want to go. Adam Kasabi can help you find a home. It's a competitive market, never been more competitive. You need good people in your corner to get the house you want at the price you want, to get your bid accepted, all that kind of stuff. Adam Kasabi and his team based out of Long and Foster in Bethany Beach are going to help you. Nobody else will. And if you want to buy or sell a house out of Delaware or Maryland, still call Kasabi. He can't do it, but he will find you the right person. He will take care and do that. Give him a call, shoot him a text, 302-864-8643. Someone in the chat, text Kasabi right now. Ask him if you watch that fucking game. 302-864-8643 or send an email to adam@processrealtor.com. Adam Kasabi, K-S-E-B-E, the official realtor of The Process. I do not know. I'm so excited about the win. I don't know what to think about the performances from Embiid and Maxi.
No, inexplicable.
Like
to know that they were going to play zone. This Miami team, this Eric Spoelstra team, plays zone more than so much more than any other team in the league. And they all looked so confused and so slow and so disoriented by it. They scored 39 points in the first half. They scored 17 points in the second quarter. Now, they came out. I did not expect them to come. The way they looked, I was like, okay, maybe they have a little bit of a punch in them. They come out in the third quarter, and they look still kind of weird. It didn't seem like it was a hot start to the third quarter.
No.
And they finish with 30 points in the third, 36 in the fourth. They did turn it around, and like that's like gumption and fucking integrity that previous Sixers teams have not had. To win this game is a feat into itself. But man, it really, really, it was a clunky start for both teams. Maxi and Embiid start off with some of the worst misses they've had all season.
And by the way, Miami is clunky. Like that's
yes, they clunk yeah, you up. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
But like it was worse than I thought. It was just some playoff jitters, like some, yep, you know, you're cold, start off, whatever. But then they go to zone and it just got even more clunky. They couldn't get the ball to Joel. Joel was just kind of standing around a lot of the time. Sometimes he would fight for position, but then other times he would just stand on the three-point line and wait it out. They couldn't get threes off quickly with Miami's length. Everybody started hesitating. Everybody.
Yep.
Every single player on the team was hesitating. You can pick which one of your favorite guy you want to get upset about, but it was every single player on the team hesitating. The length and the pressure bothering them. Too many slow decision makers, slow shooters, on their heels, walking the ball up the court, late clock bullshit. Nobody willing to drive through gaps in the zone. Like, Miami just kept pushing them out and pushing them out and turning them over. They turned the ball over so many times in the first half. They only had, I think they had 12 in the first half. They had three the rest of the game. And they were on ball. They were live ball turnovers to like trigger fast breaks for Miami. They weren't punishing them with a backdoor lob. It just seemed like they couldn't get anywhere. And then finally, Miami went away from the zone for a lot of it. Maybe they thought that there was a shelf life on it?
I honestly couldn't. If I'm coaching, which I never would because I'm not a coach, but if I'm coaching and I see the other team, this is not a 7-game series. It's no. one game, yeah. right? So if they figure out the zone by the end of the game, who fucking cares, right? You're not going to play them again in the conference yeah. finals if you play them again.
Yeah.
I was stunned. The Sixers had not figured it out.
No.
I was stunned that they stopped. I would have just kept doing it until it stopped working.
No reason not to. I have no idea what it was. Maybe they were like when I play zone, I expend more energy in zone than I expend. Don't do it. Don't you fucking do it. I expend more energy in a zone than I do in a man because you're fucking running around so much and you're a man. You can sort of just like travel with some guy, but in a zone, you really are like,
I play okay. like this. I don't play like that.
I wonder if that's what it was, especially with Jimmy being banged up.
Mike playing basketball.
So, honestly,
sign me.
I will say this about Embiid, though. I did not think he had the fourth quarter in him.
No,
I didn't think he had the fourth quarter in him. We were getting...
Looked depressed a little bit to me.
Yeah, you're getting... Somebody called up WIP today. We were doing the afternoon show. And he said, I haven't been to a Sixers game in 20 years. Tell me what to expect. And I said, look, if you see Joel turning it over, walking slow up the court in transition, grabbing at his knee, like not smiling, I was like, bad sign. They're going to lose the game. I was like, yeah. You can tell almost immediately. So I will give Joel credit for this. He looked atrocious in the first 2.5 quarters of the game. Everything wrong. Literally everything.
Yeah.
But
except for he got Bam in foul trouble. It's always his first thing is like, get Bam yeah. in foul trouble, get the opposing center in foul trouble. And then like, that's the only scripted plays I have.
So he looked terrible. And I'm not even addressing is not the name. He's done this so many times. You can never tell. So I'm just taking it at face value. He's playing. It is what it is.
Yeah.
I was shocked because I thought, and I tweeted, look, the run they're going on is nice, but they will need something from Joel or Tyrese to win this game. Joel hit the two threes.
Those are big.
He hit the and one in the lane.
Huge. Finally gets after an offensive rebound after he had 15 rebounds, but this was one of the more embarrassing rebounding performances of Joel's career, I would say.
Yeah.
I don't know how he had 15 rebounds, but it was they kept rebounding around him all the time.
Well, I thought his rebounds came when he was on the periphery of the scrum, actually. What would happen was there would be three people under the basket. He'd be on the outside and the ball would come to him.
Yeah.
But he hit the two threes. He hit the and one. He threw a couple of really sweet passes. And he like he had just, he gave them just enough to get them over the hump. And all I can hope is whatever block he had, or like whatever is going on in his head that puts him in that, like he's going to get plenty of defensive pressure against the Knicks.
Of course.
I hope that fourth quarter got him over that hump. It's not, he's hit game-winning shots before, all that kind of stuff. But when you don't, the thing about being a superstar is when you don't have it, when you literally don't have it, you still have to fucking dig deep and make plays.
Yeah.
And he dug deep and he made plays. And it was not a great game. I was saying on the radio today, I thought this was a legacy game for him. It did not end up being that.
No.
But it was I thought it was a meaningful game for him with as bad as he played and that he came through in the fourth quarter.
Yeah. I mean, this was a game six, as we talked to Daryl about last night,
mm-hmm.
but easily the most impressive advance game of his career. For this team, I mean, for the Sixers, the most impressive opponent that they beat, even with Jimmy, banged up with whatever happened to his knee. Those are big plays. Those threes are big plays. We had talked about a lot over the last couple of weeks of the season when Joel came back from the injury that he was taking more threes and taking them more confidently. He was 2 of 4 from deep today. Those two big threes in the fourth quarter were absolutely massive. And then offensive rebound and put back with the floater that he was working on all offseason, and he got fouled. He was 9 of 10 from the line. That's obviously huge. But like,
they were great from the line overall tonight, by the way.
Always have been all season.
Yeah.
Have been for the past couple of years. Like, they are some of the best foul shooting teams in the league, and that edge makes a difference every time.
So Joel's final line, 23 points, 15 boards, 5 assists.
The five assists were nice. And we'll talk about it when we get to Kelly, but like that pass to Oubre underneath when he sealed him on Jimmy and got an M1 on it. That was the game winner pretty much.
Yeah.
A huge pass, a huge gutsy play to make that in that moment. But Embiid just didn't have it, man. Like a couple of those plays aside, which were great, but like he draws two fouls on Bam, and then they bring Kevin Love in, which I think is a worse matchup for Joel.
Yeah, but he can't post him up.
He can't post him up, or he can face up, and he scored a couple times on him with little duck, but they're just going to send bodies at him. I would rather Bam be out there who thinks he can cover Joel one-on-one than have the bodies being thrown at Joel when he's not feeling comfortable and he doesn't know where the bodies are coming from. And on defense, like, Joel just does not get out on shooters.
No, He
just stares at him, and they scored a lot on those. Kevin Love was a plus 11 in 17 minutes because they just got a bunch of threes when they're playing five out, and he's not comfortable doing that. He's, even when he's fully healthy, he's not comfortable doing that. Luckily, the Knicks don't really have between Isaiah Hartenstein and Mitchell Robinson, like, they don't have that as an option. That's why it's kind of nice that they're not playing Milwaukee, at least, because Brooke Lopez would have eaten them up again. But he just didn't have it all game, and he was loose with the basketball. He turned it over twice on one possession and then left Kevin Love open on a wide open three. Once they go to zone, he starts to back down from the nail, and Jimmy darts from the blind side and picks his pocket. Like, he's just got to know that that's coming. Marcus Smart has done that to him so many playoffs. Marcus Smart has done that, and so has Jimmy. And they couldn't get the ball to the zone, and then when they got the ball to him, he was missing bunnies and stuff. He had a pretty cool slap outlet pass for a fast break. That's about as good as I could say about it in the first three quarters. It was a really, really rough Embiid game. I thought he was moping around. He looked slow. They take on his energy. And the frustrating thing is usually Maxi brings his own energy, but Maxi didn't have that energy tonight for a lot of it. And so everybody was just like lackadaisically moving up the court. And thank God that they pulled this out, because it would have been like a real reckoning if they did not pull it out, because you can't keep being this bad in the playoffs.
Halftime, I was doing this podcast in my head.
Yeah.
Like, I was, because I knew what the podcast was going to be. I was wrong. And people are mentioning in the chat, we have to give, as a vegan, this hurts me a little bit, but we have to give credit to what really got the Sixers in the game, and that is Brickin' for Chicken.
Dude.
Those two missed free throws psyched the fucking crowd up.
This is the chicken game. You could call it the poulet game, which is chicken in French.
Yes.
Le Poulet.
Le Poulet. Yep.
Because Nick Batum did it also, but absolutely.
Yep.
Chicken saved it. It saved the run. Like, unbelievable. There's a very good chance that Chicken has saved this era of Sixers basketball. And if that's the case, that is such a, if you can recall Scott O'Neill being upset about the brochures.
Yes.
When they traded MCW. Brochures.
Yep.
And it being some sort of like bullshit promotion that gets them out of the Boston side of the bracket. Obviously a long way to go. Well, would it be a real win for the CEO class if Brickin' for Chicken is what? Thank you to the business. Thank you to the businessmen for this win.
Thousands of chickens will die, and it was worth it. I'm sorry. Like this is, I'm sorry. By the way, if you ever needed a reason to not trust individual game plus minus, Nick Batum was a minus 10 tonight.
Yeah.
So there you go. The Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast is presented by, what do we got here? Oh, LL Pavorsky Jewelers. The Rights to Ricky Sanchez listeners go and get engaged. Over 390 engagement rings sold to Rights to Ricky Sanchez listeners from LL Pavorsky. He is the first sponsor of the Ricky. You are not permitted to get engaged with a ring from any jeweler from LL. If you have purchased such a ring, sell it at a pawn shop, take the money, go to LL, get a ring. Treats all of our customers great. Everybody who goes there raves to us. We'll get you a great price. We'll get you a great ring, and we'll treat you with respect. No pressure, no nonsense, just a handsome guy in a suit in a jewelry store selling you a ring. Again, first guy ever to advertise on the Ricky. If you want to buy an engagement ring, don't just walk in the store. He wants to be able to set aside time for you where it's just you and him. A bottle of water, some chocolate, romantic candlelight. 215-627-2252 is the phone number to LL Pavorsky Jewelers. Been there 36 years at 707 Walnut. 36 years. 215-627-2252. Send an email to lee@llpavorsky.com. Tweet at him @LLPavorsky. He is a supporter of our charities, Province Animal Center and Mama T's Community Fridge, LL Pavorsky Jewelers.
Pavorskin for chicken.
Can't figure out what Maxie's deal was in this game.
Yeah.
Just can't figure it. Looked scared. Hate to say it, but looked scared.
I think just the zone, like it just felt like he was on his heel, like on his back foot all night. It was just like everybody. Tobias did this the most, but like just like waiting. It seems like he was unwilling to pull from deep. I don't know if he just didn't feel right. He got like an elbow from Jimmy early on. Maybe that just sort of put him into a weird headspace that he couldn't kind of turn it on as much. He finally did. Like he hits a contested floater to bust the zone. Some movement with DHO, with Joel getting to score, and ISO had a little step back there. Finally attacks Butler in isolation and scores at the rim. I would have wanted him, if he was right, to go at Jimmy's knee like a fucking wrestling heel. Like absolutely attack that same knee every time. Go to make him slide that fucking feet. Take a goddamn chair to that knee if it takes. I don't care. I would have wanted
Mr. Fuji
to do it.
Out with the, you know.
Absolutely.
Some salt in the knee.
Yeah, I mean, there were a couple plays that Maxie made were still pretty impressive. Like the fact that he can turn the corner and get that ball up quickly, as we've talked about, onto the backboard. He had a couple, forced a couple goaltends. There were a couple plays on Jimmy and then on Bam where those guys block this play every time. And Maxie got it up too fast and got it in. And that's what he can do. But man, he just looked like he was waiting for other guys to do stuff. And that just has not been the case at all for the last two seasons, but especially lately.
Especially the last month or so. And dude, you know what it reminds me of a little bit is I'm not saying it's the same thing, but it reminds me of the winning the 16 games at the end of the year, you know, 5 years ago. And then all of a sudden it gets to the playoffs and it's a different world.
Seven years ago.
We are so, how have we been doing this podcast so for 11 years?
They've been in the playoffs for a higher percentage of this podcast than they have been like, you know, during the process.
Impossible. They tanked for 10 years.
The thing with Maxie is I was looking for him. I was like, they're going to blitz him. And they did. They got the ball out of his hand sometimes. I wanted to see more of that of like, oh, you're going to blitz Maxie? Well, we have Joel. And like, you can't play seven guys on the court. So somebody's going to be open. And I was waiting to see what Maxie did. Okay, you blitz him, you get the ball out of his hands. Can you find the open guy before Miami's quick defense rotates? And one time he finds Lowry on the wing when he hits a three. And then every other time it was just like, he wasn't punishing them. He wasn't punishing them for sending multiple guys at him.
No.
And maybe it was just the personnel. Like Miami just has, the zone is good. Like they have a lot of flexibility to it. They're bending it.
He's
got to
wake the fuck up, man. He's got to wake the fuck up.
But everybody did. And if I'm Tom Thibodeau, who's a very stubborn man, and I haven't checked to see how much the Knicks played zone, but I would absolutely throw some zone against the Sixers if you're New York.
Yeah.
There's no reason not to try to see if they can slow him down, slow down some dribble handoff stuff, slow down Maxi, make everybody like think about it. They have the similar, you know, you can imagine Josh Hart or Jalen Brunson picking Embiid's pocket on the blind side and doing the exact same thing that Jimmy did. They just got to figure it out. And it's disappointing from the coaching staff and from the players that there wasn't more of an attack plan. Everybody seemed like they were just so scared. And once again, somebody mentioned this on Twitter, and we've said this before, but like it seems like the Sixers shot clock is 9 seconds long and Miami's shot clock is like 55.
Well,
and it's like,
I mean,
how is this possible?
Can I tell you one of the things is like no more crossing the center court line at 16.
Yeah.
Just get the ball up the court. You
know? I think part of that is Joel's conditioning. Like he wasn't right. Like he just wasn't in good enough shape, and maybe he should have played in that Brooklyn game. There's got to be a way to get him in better shape during practice, whatever. Like maybe he's just not right. Maybe he did really tweak his knee pretty bad in that Orlando game, but like got to figure out a way to play without him. I thought B-ball was fine tonight. If Joel wasn't himself, which he definitely wasn't, I wouldn't have played him 38 minutes. Not because I'm
scared
about him getting hurt. It's because I don't think he was effective. There were times in that game where I was like, I just think B-ball would be more effective. At least he can switch everything.
B-ball had good minutes tonight,
yeah,
by the way.
Good minutes.
So let's talk about Oubre. I am proud to have switched to being Kelly Oubre guy, having been wrong. Proud to do it. He just... It's so funny that Embiid and Maxi look like their heads were out of it tonight. But you have here a list of guys that are not fucking scared. Kelly Oubre, Batum, obviously. Campaign, not fucking scared.
Yep.
He just isn't, man. Yep. He
3 minutes, 3 points, right in there.
That shot was a killer, you know?
Great. Big shot, man. Big shot in the corner.
Kyle Lowry, not scared at all. Tobias Harris should be sent to the moon, but they do have, but Oubre, just to talk about Oubre, was just like, you look at the stat line and it's not super impressive, but he was aggressive in the times when they needed him to be aggressive. And he just like, and to his credit, and it was exactly what I did not expect from him, is that he played like team basketball. He played winning basketball tonight.
Yep.
He made winning plays. He played hard. He was on the ground. He drove when he needed to, and he wasn't selfish. This was not like about getting buckets for Oubre tonight. It was like he played a winning basketball game, I thought.
I love it. I did think he played a pretty bad first half, but as did everybody. But he had finally attacks the basket and scored in the second half. When that's the thing, is like you just need guys to attack the gaps in the zone. And so much of the zone is like, yes, you have to pass through it. Yes, you have to flash high and see if you can move the ball faster than the defense can move. But you also have to attack when they're sliding over. You have to attack that leg that they're escaping. When they're moving that leg, you got to fucking attack that leg. And Oubre finally did. And he took the ball in and he scored over Kevin Love a couple times. That was really nice. The zone was really driving me crazy that they weren't doing a better job. But
well,
it's
funny. People were like mad at Nick Nurse about the zone, and I'm just like, I would be mad at him if it wasn't every coach we've had for the last 8 years. Yeah. They can't play against zone. I
wouldn't
figure
have minded
what it is.
Putting Joel down low a little bit more and being like, at least try to make them front so you can throw over the top and they have to start thinking about it. And then you can like act like you're going to make that pass and then whip it to the corner. Like it just seemed like he was in the same place pretty much every time on every time down. It wasn't working. But man, that Oubre duck in, he was in the dunker spot over and over again. I was kind of wanting him in the fourth quarter to attack a little bit more. He kind of took a back seat, but I also liked him back there because he's one of the only guys that is a lob threat on the back line. And finally he ducks in, gets position on Jimmy, and Embiid makes the pass. And Oubre, like he has all along, like all year long, when Embiid and Oubre are on the court together, they've had a nice little chemistry on those cuts. And he got it. And that was so huge. I will say, Kelly, inexplicably, I don't know if he got fouled on it, but with like 18 seconds left.
Is this the...
He went for two He went for a shot, like a contested two,
yeah,
off the chaotic inbounds where Lowry fell down twice.
Oh, right.
And that was missing. That was not going in. Luckily, yes, they fouled him.
Yeah.
But that would have been, if you
he
missed.
He should have run away. He should have run away. Yeah.
So that's, you know, there's occasionally, you're going to have some galaxy brain in there from our friend. But it, just as I've said all year long, man, he had 3 offensive rebounds, 5 defensive. His athleticism, his length, I don't think his defense on Hero was very good. But he's just like a helpful presence out there to make a play, grab a ball, rise up and high point it before anybody else does. It was a necessary. He was just another 37 minutes for Kelly Oubre. If I told you that in a win against Miami to avoid the Boston half of the bracket, if I would have told you that when they signed him for the minimum this offseason, you would have fucking had a baby.
I would have had a baby.
Yeah, you had a baby. You would have been so surprised that you had a baby. Wow.
Defying all science. A baby out of shock.
You want to do Tobias? Let's do it.
Dude, the air ball and then the 3 that broke the backboard. I just like, I can't, man.
Well, so he hit a couple in the first quarter, a couple, like when everybody else was missing, he had a couple contested mid-rangers at the end of the shot clock, which was like, okay, all right, maybe he's evening it. And then airballed a layup, missed 4 layups in 1 possession.
Oh, Charles, just like Charles Smith moment. Yeah.
Yes, it was his Charles Smith moment. That's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
Then he ends up having a big tip in and a big drive and leave for B-ball. And then he bricks another one and he's making slow decisions. I will say I got to give him credit for having 5 offensive rebounds. I can't imagine there's been many games in Tobias's career that he's had 5 offensive rebounds. He was giving effort, but
they sat him at the end of the game, man. They sat him at the end of the game.
And they finally sat him at the end of the game. What I've been asking for. He still played 33 minutes. Okay. I would have liked less because he wasn't playing well, but it's not like other guys were.
You tried to trick Daryl into that.
I tried to trick Daryl into admitting that he should. And finally, and Nick Nurse goes like, I hear what Mike's saying and I will do it.
Yeah.
Tobias did not earn a spot in those closing lineups and he didn't play the last 4 minutes. And that's the right call. Like he makes too many slow decisions. His hips are too slow on defense. He just didn't earn a spot in those closing lineups. And I'm proud of Nick for pulling him there, and they pulled out a win maybe because of it. And so I don't think that this means that Tobias doesn't have a chance to redeem some of that in this Knicks series. He's going to have to hit shots. He's going to have to play some straight up defense. It's a little weird because there's no Julius Randle, which is the easiest matchup for Tobias on that Knicks team. So we'll see where he ends up, but he wasn't good tonight.
No,
he just wasn't good enough.
He was terrible. And I know I mentioned him in the group, but, and again, numbers wise, I don't know what his numbers look like, but I feel so, and you mentioned this in the pod with Maury, I feel just so settled when Lowry is on the court.
Yeah.
I just do. He is not shaken by anything, makes the right play largely, like takes open threes, you know, takes threes that maybe aren't even so open all the time. Yeah. He was to have Melton not able to play, but have Kyle Lowry is enormous.
Yeah.
You know, if they don't get him on the buyout market, they certainly don't win this game.
I agree wholeheartedly. He starts off on Jimmy. He played Jimmy for a lot of the game. I thought he did a pretty good job. Jimmy, you know, obviously hurt his knee, but he was still 5 of 18 from the field. Lowry's penetrating, like secondary creation is really huge when nothing else is working. The fact that he can just like scoot in there and get a layup or at least touch the paint is big. And they gave him 2 steals, felt like more. Had an off-ball steal on Hero to trigger a fast break, ripped a loose ball out of Miami's hands on an air ball that I think Kelly missed. Had a big poke out on Jaquez late in the third quarter that ended in an Embiid 3. I think it was the fourth quarter. And there's a calmness to him. I don't think that Lowry or Batum played well in the first half, but there was some like calmingness to their games in a game that nobody else seemed to have their head. And I mean, I've been excited about it all year. Like the fact since Lowry got here and as Batum got healthy, like 2 guys that just really, really help this team keep their heads above water in like the bad times. Cause there's going to be times when Embiid's not hitting and he's going to mope and he's not going to get back on defense and it's going to be a fast break. And the fact that Lowry can force a tough layup and they can miss off it or Batum can get there and get a chase down block or something, like these old guys on this team are providing a lot more juice than they should have to. But it's great having them, man.
So we, right after, in a minute, we will talk about the matchup with the Knicks, which starts on Saturday at 6 p.m. Before that, tell you about Big Barker Therapeutic Dog Beds. BigBarker.com/Ricky. 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 The reason you want to go to the link is not only to find out more about the beds and order the bed, which is great. It's going to keep your dog healthier, keep your dog happier for sure. But if you go to the link, you also get two processed pup patches to iron on the bed. Iron it on anywhere you want. It's easy. Even I could do it. You get the black and white processed pup patch, the brand new red, white, and blue processed pup patch. They'll send you a couple of stickers as well. The thing is, as a dog owner, you have essentially one job. Give your dog the best life ever. That's it. Dogs' lives are not long, but they're full of love. They're full of joy. They give you so much. Your job to give them the best life ever. Part of having the best life ever is to be healthy. Part of being healthy is sleeping on a bed that supports your joints. If you, a human, slept on a bad bed, slept on a like what appears to be a pillow, which is what most dog beds look like that you get from the pet store or whatever, you would wake up, it looked comfy, but you would wake up and you would feel creaky. You wouldn't feel good. And it's the same with dogs. That's why Big Barker stepped in, created a real bed, a real mattress that supports your dog's joints, engineered by experts to do so, proven by Penn Vet to do so. As your dog gets older, the joints get creakier. You got to get the dog on a big barker. Keeps younger dogs fresh, brings older dogs back to their best, and comes for, you know, looks great. A sleek looking dog bed, and also comes in any size from the Barker Jr. all the way up to the very, very biggest extra large. A 10-year warranty. The foam doesn't flatten or they replace it for free. A 1-year at-home trial. If you don't like it, if your dog won't sleep on it, they'll give you a full refund. They'll even pay for the shipping. Handmade in the USA. Big Barker dog beds. Okay. So Saturday night, 6 o'clock, the schedule is out. Saturday night, 6 o'clock, 4:20. Yeah, man. Should I eat a, no, 6 o'clock. It starts in New York is the first game. Then Monday night. So New York is going to be a tough out. And Jalen Brunson has played great, great player. They have played great record wise on off wise or like numbers wise when Jalen Brunson's playing, when Ananobi's playing, when Julius Randle is not.
Yep.
They are tough. I'm be honest with you. They are motherfuckers. This series will be motherfuckers. But if Embiid is physically able and Tyrese Maxey wakes up, I do believe the Sixers, and they opened up at DraftKings. They're a -120 favorite for the series. I'm going to look at
Sixers
it. Sixers are -120 favorite. Mm. And because remember, when you think about championship odds, Sixers were like, it's to win the East, Sixers, I think, were +750 and Knicks were like +1500. So Sixers are 2.5-point dogs in the first game. The Sixers should win this series, and here's why. I've seen in my life a lot of teams that play harder than everybody else during the regular season and have a small guard that dominates during the regular season. Yep. But what happens in the postseason is that everybody's playing hard, everybody's playing defense, and those small guards have trouble. In addition, those teams that have the one sort of heliocentric wing player, it gets very, very hard. It gets hard for, got hard for Harden, got hard for Luka. Yep. And Jalen Brunson, great player, but certainly not the creator for others the way that those guys are. And though Jalen Brunson can score and will score, and again, they are motherfuckers, I just don't see where the points are coming from for them. They don't have a lot of players that can create, you know, offense. And I just think over a 7-game series, if the Sixers are serious about this, this is a series that the Sixers win. Again, the Knicks are good. They have a lot of players, but I just don't think the Sixers should not lose to that team in a 7-game series is what I think. They could. They don't have home court, but I think the Sixers should win the series.
I think it's going to be a really tough series. I think they are a good team. I think Tibbs is going to play them all 47 minutes and 30 seconds. I agree that when the defense tightens up in the playoffs and you're depending on a small guard, that does and should get tight. They get a lot of stuff, you know, they turn you over and get out in transition. I really, who do you think I'm going to say I want covering Jalen Brunson?
Who do you want covering Jalen Brunson? You want Oubre covering Jalen Brunson?
I want Nico Batum covering Jalen Brunson.
Oh, geez.
Length. He's not going to be
can
tricked
I ask you something?
With guile.
Real quick, they didn't start Batum tonight. What do you think that is about? They started
I think Nurse likes having at least one of Lowry and Batum on the floor at the same time.
Okay.
Just to like be an adult. But I think he worries sometimes that there's not enough offense when they're both out there at the same time. I would prefer Batum start and it's Oubre coming off the bench to give you a little pop of athleticism and head down, get to the basket off the bench.
And more Batum minutes with Embiid, by the way.
More Batum minutes with Embiid. I think like there was a little bit before the zone fucked everything up. I sort of thought that, man, these guys have a little bit of an embarrassment of riches after having nothing. You know, it's like there's too many options and we're sort of paralyzed by how many options we have. Like we could get, you know, we can get Maxi DHO. We can get, Batum at the nail, picking them apart. We can get Embiid, obviously. We can get some Tobias face-ups, whatever. And they kind of all just were like, well, what should we do? We can do any of it. But then it just turned out like nothing worked. So I like the idea of let's have a little bit more balance, a little bit more role-player-y stuff. And then Oubre can come in when one of Maxi or Embiid sits and then go, okay, I can carry us for like a 4-minute stretch here. Type of thing. But I would love Batum starting and on Brunson. I think his length is going to make it hard on him. Brunson is not crazy fast. He's just really like shifty. And I think Batum and has an incredible floater and mid-range game and uses his shoulder to like dig in and scoot it up and get to the rim. He's an excellent player. He's going to get his, but I think Batum would make it really hard on him because he can slide his feet really well. They should win. They should win. I mean, they're going to be, Ananobi's going to cover Maxi a lot. That's a tough cover. Earlier in Maxi's career, that was a really tough cover. I think there were a couple times, you know, the game that we rang the bell was a tough Sixers game with Ananobi doing a lot of smothering of Maxi. Obviously, Embiid didn't play in that game. I think DiVincenzo will get a shot on Maxi too. You kind of just like, what I want, and this is, you can play the goddamn song, but like, if Batum can hang on to Brunson, then you don't have to double off of DiVincenzo, who has become a really, really good three-point shooter off the catch.
No help. The reason why defense is bad lately, such a nothing play.
Bend the guy in front of you.
No help.
Too often,
no help. Like stands and watches other guys. No help.
We may as well try.
No help.
Is it going to work? I don't think it's going to work. It didn't work. Like, if you double off of, like, Josh Hart, or even, like, kind of Ananobi, whatever, like, I don't love it, but, like, or, like, Precious Achiuwa or something, okay, you got to send help to somebody in a switch, fine. But like if you're doubling off of Bojan Bogdanović or Dante DiVincenzo or Brunson for some reason, like you're going to get burned. It felt like tonight there were just so many Heat threes were wide open. And that's a miscommunication. That's like assuming somebody else is going to get there. It frustrated me. I will say I wouldn't have minded some Ricky Council minutes tonight. I think that he would have just the effort and the second effort is there for him that in a way that it isn't for some other guys. And just getting that, like, I think this is kind of a Ricky Council series of just stealing them a couple of extra possessions. Cause the Knicks are going to steal you a possession. And it was so frustrating watching Miami get to 18 offensive rebounds in this game and turn the Sixers over and Sixers only generate 4 steals in this game. That's not who they are. It was a frustrating one, and I think they would do with a little bit more athleticism and verticality.
So this, per our very own Dan Olinger, who you can subscribe to his writing at writes2rickysanchez.com. Just tap subscribe, get his writing and all the Ricky writing right into your inbox. This is about Tobias not finishing the game from Nick Nurse. I thought Tobias was playing fine. By the way, anyone who has ever had a significant other, if they tell you that something is fine, that means it is bad. So I thought Tobias was playing fine. How are you doing? Fine. Nope. I thought Tobias was playing fine. He played a ton of minutes. Thought he was absolutely tired. And that's the only reason I made the switch to Kyle. I just thought it was a time where Kyle makes a play or two. Thank God Tobias was the only person who was tired.
Yeah, he's the only one.
None of the other
he's
guys are
lie.
Tired.
It's fine for him to lie. It's fine for him to lie.
Yeah.
Man. That was a, I don't know what's going to happen this fucking year. I'm still like recovering from the Heat game. I'm not doing a good job of like looking forward to the Knicks. It's going to be probably a six or seven game series, and people are going to get punched in the mouth and somebody's going to get hurt and all that stuff. But this Miami game is brutal. Delon Wright fucking killing me after I wanted him all year. Haywood Highsmith hitting like, how many points did Haywood have? He had 9. It felt like he had 70. He had a ton of like tough twos, like weird in between twos in strange spots. People want us to bring up the refs. I thought the refs were bad, but there was a defensive 3 seconds on Lowry where his foot was like, as they called it, like he's been standing with 1 foot out of the paint for a while. And you're like, what are you doing? There was a delay of game, technical foul. It's like, this is the playoffs. Fucking grow up.
I did kind of like them not calling grifty fouls.
Those were fine. Yeah. That was fine. I was fine with that. Lowry getting tackled by a hero on a layup that he goaltended was a crazy choice to not call a foul on. And Bam blocking Embiid like an offensive tackle on a Jaime Jaquez drive under the basket was also insane. I didn't think it was a well refereed game in that respect. But as far as ignoring the grifty fouls, that's what I've been asking for years. So that part of it, I have been fine with.
Yeah, previewing Knicks is like, I want to bask in this game. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I do too.
The game was terrible, but it was exciting, and I don't know if it's because because I'm back at IP and I have all this like Philly coursing through my veins or whatever. I was so fucking excited, man.
You're back.
Like
you're back,
kicking baby. Stuff, screaming, throwing pillows, scaring the house. Let's fucking go.
It is like when a heel turns babyface.
Yes.
You're going from New York to Philly and now we face the Knicks.
Yeah. So, by the way, like if the Sixers were to lose this series, I will eat more shit from coworkers than I've ever eaten in my entire life.
Yeah. Rightfully so.
Yeah.
I would like the inbounding to be a little bit easier. God, it seems like every
rough.
Inbounding, it always comes down to inbounding some basketball, and it fucking is a torture chamber every time. I love it. I just love that they got B-ball finally an alley-oop. Like that was so nice for him to do. And
the B-ball alley-oop was sick, by the way.
And it was from Buddy. I mean, like, that was a great play. Buddy didn't shoot well. He's here to shoot. He should shoot better. He should shoot more often.
More, yeah.
But, like, him penetrating and attacking those closeouts was like, part of the difference, in addition to Batum hitting those threes, part of the difference in this game.
By the way, B-ball lays that fucking up a lot. The fact that he dunked it. Yeah, and, dude, this isn't nothing. I'm dooting a lot. Sorry. I'm just,
you can
somebody asked the chat if I just ate a weed gummy while we were doing the pod, and I did, cause I got to go to sleep after and I gotta come down. When you dunk the alley-oop, the crowd fucking loves it.
Yeah.
And you got to take every advantage that you can get in a game like this. And a home basketball crowd can help swing the game. That's why you dunk that alley-oop and don't lay it in. That's why you don't dipsy do. That's why you dunk it.
In a season where it felt like Embiid or Maxey had to do everything for them to survive, like they didn't do that tonight and they still won. And that's role players making plays, hitting shots, a couple timely defensive possessions, a couple decent offensive rebounds, 15 offensive boards, nothing to sneeze at. A lot to clean up before a very tough Knicks team that's going to fucking not back down 1 inch.
Nope.
But they beat a good team tonight. It's the first time they've advanced against a good team in the history of this podcast. And I'm happy about it. Thank fucking God, man. That was a brutal first half.
It was brutal. I was saying through the first half and at halftime, I was doing the podcast in my head and I was fucking miserable.
Yeah.
But we still have a chance at it being the year. We have a chance.
The chicken game.
The chicken game.
The goddamn
le
chicken
poulet
game.
Le poulet. Le poulet. So we will talk to you after game one of the Knicks. Enjoy this one. Bask in it. Is it pathetic that we're celebrating a playing game over the A seed? A little bit. Do I care? Not at all.
Nah.
I have no shame.
Survive. Survive in advance.
No shame.
It's March, baby.
Eating weed gummies on the pod, live on the internet. No shame. We'll talk to you Saturday night. Are you down with TTP?
Yeah, you? No. Lick face.
If you don't fuck with me, then I won't fuck with you.
If you don't fuck with me,
then I won't fuck with you.
But if you fuck with me,
I'm gonna fucking kill you!
Time for Plan B.